Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis, and this is Music Weekly from The Guardian. In today's podcast, we speak to Robin about the first of her three short new albums.
I even think it's nicer when you know, people make shorter albums, like Thriller is only 10 songs, and those albums are always great for me, because I feel like I can get the whole thing, and I don't have to go back and listen to it in parts, or usually there's no really bad songs in a shorter album as well.
There's M.I.A., Mark Ronson and Aeroplane in Singles Club, and Rosie spoke to MJ Cole on what inspired him to return to making music.
It's just the way that there's been this fusion of kind of UK-based music. So, because obviously I was there at the beginning of Garage, and, you know, the dubstep thing has really kind of come out of that. And so I've suddenly, you know, really communicated with a lot of the dubstep sounds.
That's all in Music Weekly. Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not too bad. I've been hanging out with Robin. Rather bizarre.
Oh, she's great.
She's really nice, isn't she? We've all met Robin now.
We have.
We all hung out. Yeah. Sorry, I should introduce our other guest. Joining us today, it's author and freelance writer for The Guardian, back by popular demand. Amazingly. Not amazingly. I mean, you're a lovely man. Dorian Linsky. Thank you for coming in, Dorian.
That's all right.
The listeners demanded it.
I know. And who am I to disappoint them?
It was your emo.
There was no time for false modesty. Yes, it was. It was your emo hip hop remark. Well, first up today, it's Robin, our close personal friend. Mm-hmm. Rosie spoke to her on the telephone, didn't you?
Indeed. And the first thing I wanted to know was why Body Talk One is the first of three albums that she's going to have out in the same year.
I've had this career where it's gone up and down, and sometimes I've released my records in lots of countries and sometimes only here in Sweden. And when I do well with a record like I did last time, I end up like touring sometimes for like 3 years, you know, or actually four. And it was just like an idea that I wanted to shorten all these periods down and be writing and touring at the same time. I even think it's nicer when you know, people make shorter albums, like Thriller is only 10 songs, and those albums are always great for me, because I feel like I can get the whole thing, and I don't have to go back and listen to it in parts, or usually there's no really bad songs on a shorter album as well. So
that's true.
It just felt like an interesting and fun way of doing it that made sense for the people who are going to buy it, but also for me.
So what does the name Body Talk come from? Where does that come from?
It comes from my friend who has a club in London called Body Talk. I felt like the last album was such an important piece of the puzzle for me as a person, because I was able to do something on my own with no creative pressure, and I was really happy with it too. And I felt like I started something there. I started like a journey, and this is the continuation of it. It is an album that where I really just indulged in things that I find interesting, which is dance music and dance and pop songs that are emotional again, and funny words and things that pisses me off, and you know, just like I just kind of allowed myself to be really nerdy again with, I guess I was last time too, but I feel like I was this time in particular with like really getting into like dance music from when I was a kid.
One of the reasons I've always liked you as a pop star, well, at least since Robin came out, is that I feel like you are a feminist for my generation of women. A lot of people don't really want to have the attachment of being political or having those ideas, because they think in case it alienates people, in case people think they're too serious. So
I don't mind being serious at all. I think when I write music, you have to be, you have to mean it, you have to be sincere. So I would say that I would definitely have the intention of doing something that makes sense to me and that hopefully moves and touches other people as well. And I'm a thinking person, and I I have, of course, views about the world, but I think when you use the word political, it becomes something else. But yeah, I'm definitely a feminist. I enjoy having that view on the world where I'm questioning things. But at the same time, I don't really take what I do too seriously, in the sense that I still feel like it has to be fun. Mm-hmm. It has to be pop music is something that dies if you are too precious about it. It still has to be something that allows the listener to feel like it is their music too.
Is there anything that you want to say about what to expect from the second instalment?
When we came up to this date, when we were going to set the release date for the first album, I realized that, oh my God, it's going to be more. I thought it was going to be easier for me to do it this way, but it's the other way around. Like, it's more work. I have to make 3 albums, and they all have to be really good. You can't hide any songs. The songs that went on the first album, they're the songs that were finished by the time it had to come out. There's lots more to come. I mean, there's like so many songs that are just waiting to be recorded, and I'm still in the studio working as we speak. It's not like they're 3 different albums. They're part of the same thing, and it's a constant process for me. I'm just keeping it going. And so it's really alive, you know, like the way of releasing music this way, it's really alive. It's like I just finished these songs, and the song with Works Up we mixed like just only a month ago. So it's like a continuation. It's the same album, but just that it's released as soon as it's fresh, as soon as it's ready, it's going to be out, you know?
That was Robin talking about the first of 3 new albums that are on the way this year. All, are they all called Body Talk?
Body Talk Part 1, 2 and 3?
Yeah. what do we make of Body Talk? But we've got to be careful because we're comments on the blog, people don't like it if you say you don't like or whatever, you don't like the person that you've just interviewed's new record. I think in this case we all like, do
yes.
We all like Robin's thing?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Rest easy, troops. Dorian, what do you like about it?
Well, Robin in some ways is like this sort of fantasy pop star for, you know, people who kind of really think about pop and really analyze pop. Because a lot of the time what you have is like the Annie problem with the cool person with the cool producers who's got quite a witty, wry take on pop music. Mm. Isn't actually popular.
No, no, no.
He keeps having records that kind of should be hits but aren't. Then the people that do have hits are often, you know, often great, but they don't have that outsiderish perspective. And I think Robin somehow, she started off as a proper Max Martin pop star as a teenager.
Literally as a Max Martin pop star. I mean, she's working with Max Martin.
And then she sort of evolved into this really clever, imaginative, knowing character who, and then she comes back with a much stranger record, the last one, and then goes to number one with Every Heartbeat, which is amazing.
Do you think her new stuff lives up to With Every Heartbeat?
It definitely does. And also I think she's distilled what she got right with Robin as well, which she kind of admits. I think that's okay to say, well, you know what, that was popular last time round. Dancing on My Own, as soon as you hear it, you feel like, oh, that's an absolute follow-on from With Every Heartbeat. And I think what I like about her is very similar to what Dorian said, but there's something incredibly pure about her approach to pop music. You don't really get any gimmicks. You don't get this, you know, it's not a particularly new thing, although you're seeing it with Christina Aguilera and Lady Gaga. You know, Lady Gaga's doing this sort of pop art, slightly surreal thing. Christina Aguilera's got this bionic character. It's, you know, it's always been in pop music very popular to choose a character or a theme to project your song to. And she's never done that. She called the last album Robin. You know, she's always been very, very straight down the line, and I think that works brilliantly for her.
Although when I interviewed her, she was, for the photo shoot, wearing a planet on her head, which was quite showy, quite dressy, I thought.
When I interviewed her, which was last Friday in Stockholm, it was absolutely amazing, I thought, because this woman that's been famous forever in Sweden. I mean, she's been absolutely huge since like 1993 or something like that. And appeared to be able to walk around the centre of Stockholm completely unmolested. Not a single person, It's very yeah. obviously Robin. She had a big planet on her head. but I thought that was really strange. I thought they've got a very different attitude to stardom in Sweden, I think. And she said that's why she still lives there, because she can get on with her own thing.
So they don't pap people all the time, basically.
There was not much papping going on while I was there, no, certainly. But she's kind of an interesting person. She's got a lot of thoughts about mm-hmm. pop music. And you can see why it didn't work, her being a manufactured pop star, I think, which is really...
Well, she's kind of got that Xenomania perspective on pop, but she's her own Girls Aloud. Mm. She's the backroom yeah. brain and the person up front, which is, you know, it's such a fantastic combination. I just do love the fact that the first track on this album is called Don't Tell Me What to Fucking Do.
Yeah, and it's what just, the fuck
just so cool. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of like hang out with her when I heard that.
Body Talk Part 1 is released on June the 14th. It's the first part of the Body Talk series, 3 mini albums. The third of which, as far as I can go, they haven't actually finished yet.
Probably
and not. She doesn't seem to know what's going on the second one either.
She has got a good duet with Snoop on the second one, in which she raps with him, and she wow. raps the line, I went to Rome, I sat down with the Romans, I said, we need a black pope and it better be a woman.
Hey, right on.
Favourite line ever in a Robin song.
so yeah, out on June the 14th, Body Talk Part 1, very good mini album, go out and get it. Singles Club now, you know the drill. We each nominate a new single that we like the sound of, or in Rosie's case last week, we just bring in some old rubbish that we don't particularly like, and then we break them down. First up, let's have a listen to Rosie's selection. So the army's looking at me like I'm a bitch, and I'm thinking about the babies lying in the ditch, thinking if they had a kite phone, you see the shit, and what you see in my space just a little bit. The story's always fucked by the time it hits. Why the hell would journalists be thick as shit? Cause lies equals power equals politics. I'm a sinner. That was Haters by MIA. What is it about MIA that, although she makes amazing records and brilliant forward-thinking different music, why does she get on my tits?
Because she says lines like that about babies in the ditch.
Yeah.
Or maybe because you are thick as shit.
I am a journalist and I am thick as shit. I'm a hater.
So this is a response. This is a response track to the interview she did with a journalist in the New York Times, where she felt she'd been stitched up.
Explain why she felt she'd been stitched up.
It was a really good piece. It was very interesting. Basically, I think MIA has now become a point of success for where hearing her talk about the struggles of poor people and maligned communities is a bit grating when she says in the next sentence, we live in this big house in LA and we had like so many people over there, we just bought the house next door. her fiancé is from a very wealthy American family, so I'd speculate where the money comes from because she doesn't actually sell that many records. But... And there was this line in the interview where the interviewer kind of quoted her talking about how she doesn't want to be Bono, but she's just for the people and she's just standing up for the oppressed. And then she eats a truffle oil French fry, which obviously, and apparently this interviewer has done it before when she interviewed Megan Fox. It's obviously a symbol in her... in her articles to say this person's really out of touch. They think they know about the common man, but they...
Do you think the journalist turns up at interviews with a small box of truffle oil French fries?
Well, actually, Alexis, so she
no,
she,
no.
She obviously
what
does
an amazing tactic! I'm totally doing that
in the same restaurant. This interview, whose name I forget,
Lynn Hirschberg,
obviously does the interviews in the same bar restaurant. And MIA, I don't know why or how or what, but she recorded. There was a recording of them meeting, so you hear her. The interviewer coming in, sitting down. Hi, how are you? Oh, hi, I'm Maya. Da, 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 da. She said, oh, you've got to get these French fries. They're great. They come in three different things.
No.
And she orders them. But all that to one side. The original of this song is by Various Productions. It's a really early dubstep track that I think is really great. All MIA has done is wrapped some incredibly basic analysis of modern society / attacking a journalist on top of it. But it's kind of a microcosm of, you know, I do like Amaya, but it's a microcosm of what she does is which is put other people's ideas together in a way that's completely palatable.
Doreen, do you agree?
not so much. Actually, no, I spent quite a lot of time sort of defending MIA and various
online forums.
But I mean, in this context, I think, you know, Hirschberg, it was a hatchet job. It was snarky. As MIA putting up another bit of raw audio points out, that Hirschberg deliberately compressed quotes in a way that made her point seem more idiotic. Mm. I mean, not that it wasn't a little bit idiotic to start off with, but it was obviously a stitch-up. And the point about, well, if you get to a certain level of success, whatever, you can't talk about poor people, it's just nonsense to me. Unfortunately, I think MIA was funny when she tweeted Hirschberg's mobile number, pretending it was her own, and said, hey, call me and discuss it. And so thousands of fans ring Lynn Hirschberg. So that was like bitchy but funny. I thought posting the raw audio was brilliant as an insight into the process and why she is aggrieved. And then this is just nonsense.
It's just really pathetic.
Really dim. It's like she's being accused of being sort of, you know, childish and puerile with her use of political rhetoric. And so what does she do? She comes out with a record which is more puerile in its use of political rhetoric than like anything she's ever done before.
it's
like someone
true.
Who hated MIA could not have created a worse MIA track. And that really saddens me because I've heard the new album and, you know, there's some amazing stuff on there. And at the moment, she's looking like a bit of a div.
And I do want to say, I don't agree that she hasn't got a right to talk about the things she talks about, particularly with the Tamil people. I don't agree with that sentiment at all. I think the way that it was presented in this article made her sound quite stupid in the way she was doing it. But I think pop stars should be talking about this stuff, and they should be integrating it in their music, and they should be making the kind of music videos that she made for Born Free. They should be doing that.
I've interviewed people where, if I had wanted to, I could have compressed, simplified, edited quotes in a way, when they were particularly talking about politics, which would have made them look like howling morons. But I didn't, because I wasn't writing a hatchet job. Mm. And I think here the problem is that if Hirschberg had scaled it back a little bit, seemed like she was being more even-handed, she would still have given MIA enough rope. Mm. There would still have been some pretty stupid stuff. But the whole balance was tilted. Like it was bad journalism, I think.
Wow. So bad journalism provokes bad record. I believe this is...
welcome to 2010.
Welcome, yeah. it's Mr. Writer Syndrome. I believe that's the technical term for it. Haters by MIA is all over the internet. Now, I noticed once again, Rosie, you brought a song you don't like.
No, well, I just thought it was funny that we had to talk about Trufflegate.
No, totally. Anyway, look, let's have a listen to Dorian's Choice. That was Aeroplane, We Can't Fly, brought in by Dorian. Aeroplane, remixes du jour, big on the new disco / Balearic scene. But now they're sort of being pitched as artists in their own right. I think they're sort of going for a big push. They've signed to Wall of Sound. Dorian, what do you like about this Aeroplane record?
Well, I've been really excited about the debut Aeroplane album for the last couple of years. They're a duo from Belgium. Like you said, they've done lots of remixes, particularly the Grace Jones one, William's Blood, on Wall of Sound.
That's great.
And... Shortwave Set on Wall of Sound, and Paris, Friendly Fires. And what I think is promising is that they've got an amazing way with a vocal, with melody, that sometimes great remixers like Tischwartz, they get all confused when they make an artist album and they bring in the wrong guest vocals.
Oh, yeah.
Normally Brian Molko.
Yeah, Brian Molko seems to get that phone call.
Kiss of bloody death. And then they make some horrible sort of goth trance thing. But with Aeroplane, it seems like... they just understand pop. They've got this brilliant sort of deluxe, expensive kind of sound. And here, they've totally amped that up. And it sounds like it was recorded in Compass Point, Nassau, which was
certainly does
the mecca for like 80s bands with a huge advance to splurge.
Yeah. Amongst other great records, Quick Step and Psychic by the Thompson Twins was recorded there, I seem to remember.
I'm hoping it's probably going to be more like Grace Jones than the Thompson Twins. But yeah. It's just got that brilliant sort of, I don't know, it's got this really pricey sound to it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I really like it. I'm sort of,
intrigued by the notion of trying to pitch, you know, two backroom producers. I mean, both Dorian and I worked in the dance press in the 1990s and know only too well the pitfalls of trying to sort of promote to, you know, amazing producers as artists. It tends not to work. But this is a really strong record, I thought. It's really good. I really liked it. Rosie.
So this is the first single from their that is their own, from their debut album, is that right?
No, they've had singles out before.
No, but remixes.
They've had singles out in their own
Whispers,
right, well.
They had one called Whispers, which is amazing. But this is the first one from their album, which they've been working on for quite a long time. I mean, they were being buzzed about 2 years ago.
Weirdly, it reminds me of Williams by Grace Jones.
Yeah, but it does sound like it.
it's like they've taken what she did with the vocals in it, or, you know, what the producer did with the vocals in it, and I guess what they did in the remix, and made it less sinister and ancestral, and made it all more about sort of having cocktails on the beach.
They are quite cocktail-y.
Cocktail-y.
Cocktails on the beach is a good thing for music to be about, isn't it? Is it? I don't know.
Should
it be about the poor people? Like M.I.A.
Thing is, they make me think of cocktails and yachts and truffle fries, but without being wankers about it.
Yes.
Like, normally, yes. Stuff that is that kind of, like, affluent sounding is kind of gloopy and annoying.
Mm, yeah, I know what you mean.
But this just has this real lightness and joy to it.
I agree. That's the first single from the album, which is set for release on September the 6th through Wall of Sound. Now it's time for my track. That was Mark Ronson, believe it or not. That's Mark's Circuit Breaker by Mark Ronson, which I believe is coming out on his forthcoming album Record Collection. I really liked it. It struck me as different from the style that Mark Ronson is famous for, obviously. The record it reminded me of, rather bizarrely, although it's sort of a homage to video game soundtracks and things like that, the record it really reminded me of was a piece of music called Scene One by George Martin, which you may or may not have heard. It was the music that George Martin composed in 1967 for the launch of Radio One. It's amazing, sort of fanfare-y kind of piece of music with Sgt. Pepper-y production touches, and on one level that doesn't sound anything like it, but there's something about the uppiness and the fanfariness of it that made me think of that. I thought that was a really interesting thing. Good little video as well online. Rosie.
It's weird because obviously he's synonymous with horns in my head, so I was not
in so many ways Mark Ronson is synonymous with horns in ladies' heads.
I was not expecting to hear this. I think it's funny because the whole computer, the whole retro computer thing, as in SNESes and, you know, Segas and stuff like that, was like 18 months ago. I was a Boy Scout. Well, their whole thing was making stuff on Game Boys and Crystal Castles, making music that sounds like it's made on consoles. So this is like 18 months later he does, which is actually what he quite often does. He's not new. Mm. He's never pretended to make music that is particularly new or even to be about trying to be ahead of the curve. But he's done it with complete finesse here, which is, you know, it sounds great. He's an accomplished musician, so it sounds great, but I don't really feel there's anything more to it than that.
Okay, sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty good recommendation. What do you think of this record? Sounds great. But nothing about the poor people. That's the thing. Yeah. Nothing about the babies in the ditches. Dorian.
Yeah, well, it's refreshing because I initially liked Mark Ronson's big old horn blasting thing when Version came out. And then after a while, it began to grate somewhat. And then I went to see him at Hammersmith Apollo. And it just struck me, it was like total ITV. It just sounded like when they did like God Put a Smile on Your Face. Bup, 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 bup. I thought it was the kind of music that if Chris Martin was on Parkinson, like the house band would play it. And it just seemed so like, it just seemed to have turned into something quite hideous, or maybe it was always hideous and I didn't notice. And I think he's a smart guy. His first album was actually really, really good. Really good, mixed up. The one in 2003.
Oh, yeah, the one with all the rappers on it.
Yeah.
All them rappers.
All them, all them rappers.
Doing that rapping.
And so I kind of figured that he'd know that was kind of played out. Mm. And this, I mean, it's kind of, it's quite disposable sounding, but I think this would be like fantastic if it was like the first track on the album and then it kicks in with some other fancy
some sort
business.
Of big horn-laden cover
of whiter shade of pale or something.
Oh my God.
Standing in the way of control with horns. Amazing. Right, well, that's Mark Ronson's Circuit Breaker from the new album Recollection, which is due out this September. It's, again, all over the internet if you want to hear it. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave feedback for us. Here are some posts from last week's show. The thread got off to a fairly negative start this week. This guy called Mikey Dooley, great name, and he had this to say. Just shows print journalists shouldn't make radio. First, speak up and stop trailing off on your sentences. No one knows or cares that whoever Male Voice 1 is, that he was away. Away from where exactly? Well, I would have thought it's fairly obvious I was away from the podcast, but you know. Also, it seems badly recorded in places. Zoom recorder or one of those dreadful USB mics? Also, I started listening because you mentioned some band on another page, and 10 minutes in, that still hadn't been mentioned. WTF. Too boring. Not sure. Anyhow, buck up. Right, so let me just get this straight, right? Because we didn't mention the band that said was going to be on the show in the first 10 minutes, if you get a magazine, Mikey Dooley, right, and it says on the cover, interview with, I don't know, whoever you like, you know, Coldplay or whatever, and the Coldplay interview isn't on the first three pages, do you, like, get really narky with the magazine or something? Anyway, Extraordinary Vamp responded on our behalf. It's a 40-minute podcast, genius. I suspect there is a very good chance that not everything will be covered in the first 10. Mikey Dooley got back to him. Sorry, I read your comment and was going to respond seriously until I noticed that you appear to be a fan of Belgian music. Soulwax. Ha 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 ha. Sorry, that was rude. Ha 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 ha. Wow, I'll tell you what. Mikey,
what doesn't make you sound like a knobhead is when you type, ha ha ha.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think
he sounds really delightful.
He sounds great, doesn't he?
Let's take him to lunch.
Should we have him on? He sounds fantastic. On a lighter note, this boy, Oliver. Alexis and Rosie, I'm a regular listener and have been making my own Spotify playlist, which I update every week with the bands, singles and labels you feature. If a song is not available on Spotify, I just pick a similar song, etc. And to find it, he goes on, but to find my profile, just pop this into the search bar on Spotify. Spotify:user:this.Oliver. This boy, Oliver.
Yeah, I think that's really nice that he did that.
Well, there you go. That's very, very good of him. Thanks as ever for all your feedback. Even you, Mikey Dooley. Do listen in again.
Especially to this one,
yeah. Keep it coming, please. Yeah, thank you very much. We've got an interview with MJ Cole now. You went to meet the garage maestro.
Garage maestro. Technically, the garage maestro came in to the office.
Wow.
Came into one of our studios.
Amazing.
Indeed. Well, after his debut album, Sincere, received critical acclaim and a Mercury nomination, he recorded the follow-up Cut to the Chase in 2003. Since then, he's been off the radar somewhat. I think he was even in a rock band for a while.
We won't talk about that,
but that's one side. But he's recently found himself back in the media spotlight after a series of funky releases on his prolific label. I caught up with him. I asked him what he'd been up to in the intervening years and whether he felt the need to move away from garage music.
During those years, I experimented a lot. Yeah, the whole garage thing got a really bad name. So it wasn't, you know, that I didn't like the music or anything like that, but I experimented because, you know, I come from completely non-garage music to start with. So I did a rock project with another guy at my studio called The Distressors, which was like a full band thing. And we pretty much did a whole album. I probably worked on that for, you know, 18 months, 2 years. And we actually got to the stage where we were going around doing the pubs in, you know, in London and just doing little small festivals. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I did a sort of duo with a really great singer called Laura Vane that was a sort of gold frappy, kind of quite grungy, not kind of dance music, but very down-tempo, sort of breakbeat orientated thing. So I tried a lot of different avenues during that time, but nothing really stuck. So I'd sort of say there were dark years in a way, but sort of necessary for me to kind of be where I'm at now, basically.
What is it that inspired you again?
I think it's just the way that there's been this fusion of kind of UK bass music. So, because obviously I was there at the beginning of garage, and you know, the dubstep thing has really kind of come out of that, and so I've suddenly, you know, really communicated with a lot of the dubstep sounds, you know, the way the place it's come from. So it's the slightly less just very big, you know, kind of rounded bass, sort of tickly hats going on, but it's come a bit more in your face and stuff with kind of big build-ups and drops that really work in sets. I guess it's that with a combination of this UK funky thing that came around kind of, you know, this time last year, which obviously has a lot of elements of, you know, garage in it, very UK street music, some vocals in there, but also mixed with this kind of house sound, this kind of Diplo, Afrojack, Afrobeat, basically rhythms. It's kind of crossed over with that. So it's a big, you know, blend of all these things that's kind of got me going.
Funky side of things is what we're hearing on that, things like the Rhythm EP.
Yeah, I reckon on the Rhythm EP, it's you know, obviously a blend of kind of, you know, well, rhythms as you'd have in a sort of traditional sense, you know, kind of Jamaican soca kind of influence stuff, but mixed with this UK funky kind of rhythm and just kind of big bass lines, very simple kind of approach, but very direct stuff that, you know, really punctuates and works well in clubs.
When you were talking before about how you personally felt about garage, UK garage, did you feel bored by where you could go musically, or were you kind of put off with how much it crossed over?
I think I still maintain that, you know, the two-step genre was one of the most, well, is one of the most malleable kind of elastic genres ever really, because it's just, you know, rhythmically it's very open, it's not very restricted. It was more a kind of feeling. I think I felt more restricted by the whole scene in a way, you know, the way that you could get away with doing certain things, or I couldn't turn up to a club in a pair of trainers. Well, I used to do that actually, because, you know, say, do you want me to play or not, sort of thing. but I felt a bit more restricted, yeah, by the people in it and the actual scene itself, that than the genre. I think the four to the floor kind of baseline stuff, that was a bit more restrictive, but I still maintain that, you know, two-step lends itself to commercial music, it lends itself to the club really well. So I think it was everything but the actual technical bits of the music in the end. But you know, everything has its kind of shelf life, and you know, you guys know, it's, there's always flavour of the month and things are cyclic and they go up and they go down, and but you know, those kind of undulations are what I kind of get off on in music really.
What's the one song that you are playing at the moment that always goes down brilliantly, or that you're surprised at how well it goes down?
I mean, there's certain garage records that seem to be kind of timeless. I think a lot of Grant Nelson's stuff, Bump and Flex, his remixes of the Stevie Wonder All I Do, that I think it was Kleptomaniacs they were called, did a cover of, but his dub mix of that always goes down really well. I still play a couple of my old favourites that still go down really well, and they would have been like 10 years ago now. Yeah, there's certain records that, you know, seem to become, you know, kind of timeless, and there's even certain drum and bass records I'm playing, like Reel to Reel, We Are IE, which is actually records, you know, that I used to listen to when I was going out to Fun City when I was like 16 in 1989, sort of thing. It's, you know, it's easier to play older records now in sets because everyone's playing so eclectically, you know, you can get away with that. I remember in the old days, if you played something that was 2 months old, it was a bit like, you know, you can't play that because it's 2 months old.
How did you feel about the various remixes of Sincere?
People will always send you just remixes that they've kind of done from their bedroom, you know, of records you've done. And over the years, I've had loads of things, you know, come through to me, especially of Sincere. Sincere is a special record to me. It was kind of the thing, I made it in my bedroom at home in like 97, and it's the thing that really, you know, got me into the kind of the whole music industry. And it's something that sort of flowed out for me quite easily. I wasn't trying to do anything, it just kind of came together. It was kind of a magic record for me, so I didn't really ever want anyone to remix it. Obviously at the time there were some official remixes that happened, you know, around it. But the way the Nero remix, which is the dubstep mix of Sincere that's been around at the moment, came about was basically the guys has found an a cappella on the internet somewhere and did their own just little special to play out. And the first thing I saw, I just saw a YouTube video of them playing it at Stealth in Nottingham, I think it was. Someone pointed it to me and I just loved the sound of it. So basically, I tracked them down and said, look, I'd love to get it just to play in my sets. But really, that's the only one remix that I've ever let go through. And I didn't actually own the original record, so I had to go, it's very bizarre, I had to go back and remake the original record in order to give them the parts to put into the remix that they'd done already so that I could put it out on my label. So, you know, I'm into these new things like the Rhythm EP that I'm doing at the moment and all the stuff on my label. So it's kind of nice to know there's a sort of wizened old lady sort of standing there looking over me sort of thing as I kind of move into the future, yeah.
MJ Cole there, back after a considerable break. I didn't know his first album was Mercury nominated. It's sort of interesting that he went away and he came back.
And they got all disillusioned with the whole garage thing.
Yeah, he said sort of two-step there is the most malleable of the genres. Would you agree?
No.
Of the dance music genres?
God, no. Well, it was like a beat. I mean, it was malleable in the fact that basically whatever MJ Cole was asked to remix, he just stuck the MJ Cole two-step beat on it. And then let the track play over the top. So yes, that was kind of malleable. Like you could put that beat on anything.
Rosie,
Sidorian wasn't a fan of two-step.
No, I loved Sincere. But then after a while, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I get what you do now.
Now, do you think he's changed his approach?
Yeah, his Rhythm EP, which I think is out right now, is very good, but absolutely nothing like the kind of... I mean, you know, a lot of dubstep can be very garagey, et cetera, et cetera. Funky is all, you know, taken from the roots of garage, but this is much more the tribal end of it. So nothing like the kind of garage that he used to make, which was, you know, that kind of cerebral producer side of it, like Wookiee used to make, you know. It wasn't the Artful Dodger.
Wow, we've got you on your specialist subject here. I can see that faraway look in your eyes. It's 4 a.m. on a Monday morning. You're at Twice as Nice. You've got a champagne bottle in one hand.
Empty,
obviously. And your
Spoonies on the deck.
Spoonies of the Dream Team. Yeah, absolutely. Skibbity's emceeing. Anyway, yes.
No caps, no trainers.
You want, no, absolutely.
But MJ Cole wasn't about, you know, he was, I think that's what he was saying about coming back to UK dances. He got so sick of the kind of handbags and the lifestyle aspect of it, which was quite sickening and kind of an imitation of a lot of what you see in American hip hop and R&B. And now, you know, UK dances, everybody you talk to about it appears to feel that UK dance in particular, compared to all over the world, is at its most kind of creative and fluid. Why are you smiling?
No, I think I completely agree. I think there's a really interesting thing happening at the moment whereby there's a lot of stuff around and you can't put a generic label on it or a sort of subgenre on it, which I find really, I think it's got to be kind of a positive thing for dance music. Dorian, do you agree?
No, I agree. I mean, the thing is, you can put a label on it, but I don't want to anymore. Mm. I mean, I think, you know, when I was working on Mixmag, say, it was very important, all these micro genres. And now I read certain people writing about different forms of dubstep or this is Purple Wow, or this is prog dubstep, or I'm just making some of these up.
but not for the benefit of a friend of mine who insists that I made up Purple Wow. Not Purple Wow, that is.
No, Purple Wow is real, but prog dubstep I possibly made up. But, you know, the good thing is that it just doesn't matter, that all of these little gradations to most people who are not actually right immersed in the scene, it doesn't matter. Does it sound good? Which I think is kind of, I feel quite happy that I've just grown out of micro genres. You know?
Yeah, no, I completely, I mean, somebody on here has described Floating Points as garage. And I've got two records by Floating Points, and I would have, you know, not for a minute would I ever describe that music as garage. I didn't really know what it was called, which is, I think, a really good and positive thing.
I'm perilously close to saying there's only two kinds of music. Good music, bad music,
real music. And not real music.
How often do you get a sort of elder statesman of any genre who talks about the next generation all that positively and says, that's made me want to make music again? People that are doing stuff a bit like what I did, but doing something new with it. You never get that, really.
No. It must be quite a nice position to be in, to see your influence sort of disseminated in a very, very positive way, rather than just thinking, having that kind of LCD sound system losing my edge kind of thing of like, oh, there's younger people coming up and da 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 da. So, good for MJ Cole. I think we're all agreed, aren't we? Excellent. His debut album, Sincere, was Mercury nominated back in 2000. He is currently releasing new material on his own record label, Prolific Recordings. What of his works would you recommend, Rosie?
I think you should go and look for Rhythm, EP, R-I-D-D, I am or EM? It's very good. I am. Juicy Raymi says I am. Read him.
Fantastic. So definitely worth checking out. That's your lot for this week, people. Thank you for coming in, Dorian.
That's all right.
Always all right.
That's all right, whatever.
Won't be coming
we'll
in.
We'll go now.
Hope to see you again soon. Cheers, Rosie.
Cheers yourself.
Always a pleasure, never a chore. Thanks, as ever, to our producer, Amy. I'm Alexis Petridis, and I'll catch you next week.